Welcome to our deep dives today.
Good.
We're going to be exploring Exodus chapters 21 and 22 with Dr. John Oswalt as our guide.
All right.
Now, you might think these chapters are just a bunch of dusty old rules.
Yeah.
But as Dr. Oswalt points out in his lecture, they're actually a fascinating look at how the Israelites tried to live out the Ten Commandments in their daily lives.
Okay.
It's like a practical guidebook for ethical behavior rooted in their covenant with God.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
These chapters aren't just abstract principles.
Exactly.
They're real world examples of what it meant to live in a covenant relationship with God.
Exactly. And what I find so intriguing is how it all ties back to the idea of worship.
Okay.
Dr. Oswalt emphasizes that for the Israelites, ethical behavior wasn't just about following rules.
Right.
It was an act of expressing their relationship with God.
It's like their actions were a tangible way
of showing their devotion to God.
Yeah.
And one of the most striking things about these chapters is how much emphasis is placed on protecting the vulnerable.
Right. You would think a legal code from thousands of years ago would prioritize the powerful.
Yeah.
But right off the bat, we see these detailed laws about how to treat servants.
And it's important to remember that we're not talking about chattel slavery here.
Okay.
Dr. Oswalt explains that it was more like indentured servitude.
Okay.
A system designed to address economic hardship.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
He even has a personal connection to this.
Okay.
He mentions that his own Mennonite ancestors used indentured servitude to come to America.
That's a fascinating historical tidbit.
Yeah.
And it really brings this concept to life.
Right.
So walk us through how this system worked.
Sure. Let's say someone fell into debt.
Okay.
They could choose to sell themselves into service for a maximum of 6 years to pay it off.
Okay.
But after that time,
they were free to go. And there were some really humane provisions built into the law.
Interesting.
For example, families weren't separated.
Wow.
And there was even a touching ritual for those who chose to stay with their master because they developed a genuine bond.
It almost sounds like a form of social safety net.
Yeah.
Providing a pathway out of poverty.
It definitely had elements of that.
Right.
And it makes you wonder.
Yeah.
How do our modern systems measure up?
Right.
Do we offer that same level of compassion and opportunity for a fresh start when people are struggling financially?
That's a great question to ponder.
Yeah.
I mean, we have systems like bankruptcy and social welfare programs.
Yeah.
But do they truly address the root causes of economic hardship and provide a path to lasting stability?
It's a complex issue for sure.
Yeah.
But I think these ancient laws challenge us to think critically about how we care for the most vulnerable members of our society.
Absolutely. No moving on.
Okay.
Dr. Oswalt also talks about violence and the value of life in these chapters.
Right.
And this is where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
He points out that the law emphasizes proportionate justice, especially when it comes to accidental death.
Yes. And the concept of blood is central to this idea.
Okay.
Dr. Oswalt explains that blood represents life itself,
right,
and it can't simply be disregarded, even if a death was unintentional.
Right.
He even connects this to the Christian belief in atonement.
Okay.
The idea that God, being perfectly, just can't simply overlook sin.
It's like this ancient law is foreshadowing a deeper theological truth.
Yes.
But what I find fascinating is the concept of cities of refuge.
Right.
Can you explain what those were?
Of course. Imagine accidentally causing someone's death.
Okay.
You'd be in a very vulnerable position, potentially facing revenge from the victim's family.
Yeah.
The cities of refuge were designated safe havens.
Uh-huh.
Where someone who had committed accidental manslaughter could flee for protection.
So it was a way of acknowledging that not all killings were malicious and providing a pathway for mercy and due process.
It shows a sophisticated understanding of human nature.
It does.
The desire for retribution,
but
also the need for a system that balances justice with compassion.
It's amazing how these ancient laws still resonate with us today.
They do.
I mean, we still grapple with these same issues of justice and mercy in our legal system.
Absolutely. And it makes you think about how our modern society deals with the consequences of violence, both intentional and unintentional.
Right.
Do we have systems in place that adequately address the complexities of these situations?
That's a really important question to consider.
It is.
But before we get too far down that road,
okay,
let's shift gears and talk about something else. Dr. Oswald highlights the laws regarding property rights and restitution.
This is a fascinating section.
Yeah.
Because it reveals a lot about the ancient Israelite worldview.
Okay.
Dr. Oswald points out that these laws demonstrate a deep respect for individual ownership.
Okay.
Which he contrasts with more communal or socialist ideologies.
And it's not just about respecting property.
Right.
It's also about making things right if you've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of restitution is woven throughout these laws.
Right. If you damaged someone's property or stole something, you weren't just punished.
Right.
You were also obligated to make amends to restore what was lost.
Interesting.
And this idea of responsible stewardship is a recurring theme in scripture.
Right.
Remember the parable of the talent.
Oh, that's a great connection.
Yeah.
It's like God entrusts us with resources.
Right.
Whether they're material possessions or our own abilities, and we're accountable for how we use them.
Exactly. So these laws about property and restitution aren't just about protecting individual rights.
Okay.
They're about recognizing that we have a responsibility to steward what we've been given,
right,
to use it wisely and for the benefit of others.
Which prompts the question, how do different economic systems today view property, responsibility, and wealth?
Yeah.
Do we still value these principles of individual ownership and accountability?
It's a question worth pondering.
Yeah.
And it leads us into what I find to be one of the most compelling aspects of these chapters, the connection between social justice and worship.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that. Yeah. What does Dr. Oswald say?
Well, he delves into some pretty intense topics. Sorcery, bestiality, and idolatry.
Right.
And he frames these as a rejection of paganism and its disregard for boundaries.
Okay.
He even makes this powerful statement.
Okay.
Our world is deeply fundamentally pagan.
Wow. That's a bold statement. What do you think he means by that?
I think he's getting at the idea that even though we live in a supposedly secular society, many of our values and behaviors are still shaped by a worldview that rejects absolute truth and blurs moral lines.
It makes you think about how much of our modern culture is rooted in a rejection of the sacred.
Yes.
A disregard for the boundaries that God has established.
Exactly. And that brings us to a particularly challenging concept.
Okay.
Cherem.
Okay, cherem.
Yeah.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Right.
But refresh my memory.
Yeah.
What exactly does that refer to?
It's a term that literally means devoted to destruction.
Okay.
And it refers to things that were considered utterly off limits.
Right.
Things that posed a serious threat to the Israelites' covenant with God.
Uh-huh.
It's a difficult concept to grasp.
Right.
But Dr. Oswald explains that it was about maintaining the purity of their relationship with God.
Okay.
Separating themselves from anything that might compromise their faith.
So it was about drawing a clear line between the sacred and the profane.
Right.
Protecting their covenant with God at all costs.
Yes. And it often involved the destruction of people or objects associated with idolatry or other practices deemed incompatible with their faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenging concept to grapple with from a modern perspective.
Yeah, it is.
But it highlights the seriousness with which they viewed their relationship with God.
And yet, even amidst these pronouncements about separating themselves from anything that might defile them, we also see examples of incredible compassion.
Right.
Woven throughout these laws.
Yeah.
For example, there's the law about taking a poor person's cloak as collateral.
Right. You couldn't keep it overnight.
Oh, wow.
It had to be returned before nightfall.
Okay.
It's like a recognition of basic human dignity.
Right.
Even in the context of debt and collateral.
It's almost like God is saying, even in your pursuit of justice and holiness, don't forget to show mercy and compassion.
Exactly. And Dr. Oswald connects this beautifully back to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Social justice in Exodus isn't just about following rigid rules.
Right.
It flows from a heart of compassion inspired by the character of God.
It's a reminder that true righteousness isn't just about avoiding wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's about actively pursuing good.
Right.
About caring for the vulnerable and upholding the dignity of every person.
Absolutely. And that leads us to a question that Dr. Oswald poses.
Okay.
One that I think is particularly relevant in our modern world.
Right.
Why be altruistic at all if there is no God? Yeah. What compels us to look beyond our own self-interest and care for others?
That's a really thought-provoking question.
It is.
It challenges us to examine the foundations of our own morality.
It does. And it forces us to ask ourselves, what is the source of our values? Right. What motivates us to act with kindness, generosity, and compassion?
Right. It really does make you pause and consider the why behind our actions.
It does.
And that brings us to another intriguing aspect of Dr. Oswald's lecture. Okay. His discussion of the different categories of law found in the Old Testament. Right. He talks about moral laws, civil laws, and ceremonial laws. Okay. What's the difference between these, and how do they help us understand Exodus 21 and 22?
That's a great question. Yeah. Dr. Oswald explains that moral laws express absolute truths, like the Ten Commandments. Yeah. These are timeless and universally applicable. Uh-huh. They reflect God's character and his design for human flourishing.
Okay, so those are the biggies. Right. The foundational principles. Uh-huh. What about the other two categories?
Well, civil laws are more contextual. They deal with specific situations and societal structures that were relevant to the Israelites at that time. However, they still embody timeless principles of justice, fairness, and order.
So while the specific applications might differ, the underlying principles are still relevant.
Exactly. Okay. Take the laws about property damage, for example. Right. The specific details about oxen goring other oxen might seem a bit archaic to us now. Right. But the underlying principle of taking responsibility for the harm you cause to another person's property is still valid today.
That makes sense. Yeah. So where do ceremonial laws fit into all of this?
Dr. Oswald describes ceremonial laws as object lessons designed to teach spiritual truths. He uses the sacrificial system as a prime example. Okay. These rituals were a tangible way for the Israelites to understand the gravity of sin and their need for atonement.
So they were like visual aids for spiritual concepts.
Precisely. Okay. But here's where it gets interesting. All right. Dr. Oswald argues that these ceremonial laws were ultimately pointing towards Christ. Okay. Once Jesus, the ultimate sacrifice, came,
these rituals were no longer necessary.
It's like the object lesson had served its purpose. Right. The shadow gave way to the substance.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is why he argues that the law isn't done away with by Christ. Okay. As some might claim. Right. The moral principles remain eternal. Uh-huh. The civil laws offer insight into God's character and his desires for how his people should live. Right. And the ceremonial laws pointed towards Christ and find their fulfillment in him.
That's a really helpful way to understand the continuity and progression of God's revelation throughout history.
It is. Yeah. And it allows us to appreciate the richness and depth of these ancient laws without getting bogged down and trying to apply every single detail literally to our modern context.
But it makes a lot of sense. Right. So with these categories in mind, how does Dr. Oswald apply them to the specific examples we find in Exodus 21 and 22? Well, he starts by revisiting the laws about how to treat servants. Okay. He highlights how these laws, while situated in a specific cultural context, embodies timeless principles of justice, compassion, and recognizing the inherent dignity of every human being.
And this connects back to what we were discussing earlier about how these laws, particularly those protecting the vulnerable, seem to go against the grain of what we might expect from an ancient legal code.
Precisely. Yeah. It's like God is setting a higher standard. Right. One that transcends the prevailing cultural norms of the time.
It's challenging us to think about how we treat those who are in a position of less power or who are marginalized in our society. Right. Do we extend the same compassion and concern that God calls for in these laws?
It's a question worth pondering.
It is.
And Dr. Oswald then moves on to discuss the laws about violence. Okay. Emphasizing how they demonstrate God's concern for justice and accountability. Right. Even in cases of unintentional harm.
And he brings up those cities of refuge again, right?
He does.
As an example of how the law balanced justice with mercy.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a system designed to prevent cycles of revenge and provide a pathway for reconciliation and restoration.
It makes you wonder if we have similar systems in place today that truly address the root causes of violence and promote healing and forgiveness.
That's a really important question to consider.
It is.
I mean, our criminal justice system is certainly more complex.
Right.
But do we adequately address the human factors involved?
Yeah.
The emotional and psychological trauma that often fuels violence?
It's a topic that deserves a deep dive of its own.
It does.
But for now, let's get back to Dr. Oswald's lecture.
Okay.
He also spends some time unpacking the laws.
Yeah.
Regarding property rights.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
And he's quite passionate about this topic.
Okay.
He sees these laws as a clear affirmation of God's design for human society.
Right.
One that recognizes the importance of individual ownership and responsibility.
And he contrasts this with socialist or communal models.
Right.
Arguing that God clearly intended for individuals to have stewardship over their own resources.
Yes. And he even goes so far as to say that attempts to erase those boundaries and impose a system of forced equality are ultimately futile and even harmful.
It's a pretty bold statement.
It is.
But it definitely challenges us to think critically about how different economic systems impact human flourishing and whether they align with God's design for creation.
It does.
Yeah.
And it prompts us to ask, what does responsible stewardship look like in our modern context?
Yeah.
How can we use our resources, both material and otherwise, in a way that honors God and benefits others?
That's a great question to wrestle with.
It is.
Now, I know we've covered a lot of ground already, but we can't skip over the section where Dr. Oswald delves into the laws concerning sorcery, bestiality, and idolatry.
Oh, yes. This is where things get really intense.
Okay.
Dr. Oswald doesn't shy away from these difficult topics.
Right.
He frames them as a stark contrast to the holiness and purity that God calls his people to.
And he reiterates that powerful statement.
Right.
Our world is deeply fundamentally pagan.
He does.
What do you think he's getting at there?
I think he's pointing out
that
even though we might think we've progressed beyond the ancient world, many of the same temptations and pitfalls are still present.
Uh-huh.
It's a reminder that we live in a world that is constantly vying for our allegiance, seeking to pull us away from the one true God.
And that brings us back to the concept of cherem.
It does.
Can you unpack that a bit more for us?
It's
such a challenging concept to wrap our minds around.
It is.
Yeah.
But I think understanding the historical context is key.
Okay.
For the Israelites, surrounded by pagan cultures, cherem was a way of drawing a clear line of saying, we will not compromise our covenant with God. We will not allow anything to contaminate our worship.
It's like they were engaged in a spiritual battle.
Yes.
Fighting to protect their relationship with God from anything that might threaten it.
Exactly. And while the specific applications of cherem might not translate directly to our modern context, the principle of standing firm in our faith, of refusing to compromise with anything that would diminish our devotion to God is still incredibly relevant.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we see this unwavering commitment to holiness.
We do.
This firm rejection of anything.
Right.
It would defile their covenant with God.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as we've already discussed,
there's
also this incredible emphasis on compassion.
Right.
Particularly towards the poor and vulnerable.
It's a beautiful paradox, isn't it?
It is.
This fierce dedication to purity and holiness.
Yeah.
Coupled with this deep, abiding love for the marginalized.
Right.
It's a reflection of God's own character, his perfect balance of justice and mercy.
And Dr. Oswald highlights this tension so well.
He does.
He emphasizes that social justice in Exodus
isn't
just about cold, hard rules.
No.
It's about embodying the heart of God, a heart that breaks for the oppressed and calls his people to be agents of his love and compassion in the world. It's a powerful reminder that true faith isn't just about inward piety.
Right.
It's about outward action.
Yeah.
About reflecting God's character in the way we treat others.
Precisely. And it leads us back to that question Dr. Oswald posed earlier.
Right.
If there is no God, why be altruistic at all?
Right. If our morality is simply a product of evolution or social conditioning, why should we bother to care for those who can't offer us anything in return?
It's a challenge to secular humanism, isn't it? Because if we're honest, self-preservation and self-interest seem to be the most logical driving forces in a purely materialistic world.
So Dr. Oswald is suggesting
that
a belief in God provides a more compelling foundation for altruism and true social justice.
That's exactly his argument. Okay. He believes that our capacity for love, compassion, and self-sacrifice points to something beyond ourselves. Okay. To a creator who has imbued us with his image and calls us to reflect his character in the world.
It's a beautiful thought.
It is.
And it certainly resonates with me. Right. But I'm curious, does Dr. Oswald address the fact that many of these laws, particularly the ones about property damage and personal injury, seem to have parallels in other ancient law codes from surrounding cultures? Mm-hmm. I mean, doesn't that undermine his argument that these laws are uniquely inspired by God?
That's a great question. And Dr. Oswald acknowledges his apparent similarity. But here's where his perspective gets really interesting. Yeah. He suggests that God isn't afraid to borrow from human wisdom. Right. If these pagan societies had stumbled upon some principles that reflected a degree of justice and order, why reinvent the wheel?
So it's not about the originality of the laws themselves, but about the motivation behind them.
Exactly. Okay. For the Israelites, these laws weren't just about maintaining social order. Yeah. They were an expression of their covenant relationship with God. Okay. They flowed from a deep desire to please him, to reflect his character in their lives.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does.
It's like the same raw ingredients can be used to create vastly different dishes, depending on the chef and their intentions.
I love that analogy. It perfectly captures the point Dr. Oswald is making. It's not just about the letter of the law, but about the spirit in which it's lived out.
So even though some of these laws might seem similar to those of their neighbors, the Israelites were approaching them from a completely different worldview. Yeah. One that was rooted in their relationship with Yahweh.
Precisely. And this distinction is crucial. Okay. Because it transforms the entire legal framework from a set of cold, impersonal regulations into a vibrant expression of faith and devotion.
It's like these laws became a way for them to live out their love for God. Yeah. In tangible, practical ways.
Exactly. And this, I think, is one of the most profound takeaways from Dr. Oswald's lecture. Right. It's a reminder that true obedience isn't about blindly following rules. Yeah. It's about aligning our hearts with God's heart. About allowing his love and character to shape our actions and interactions with others.
It's a challenge to move beyond a legalistic mindset.
It is.
And embrace a more holistic understanding of what it means to live in covenant with God.
It is. And Dr. Oswald doesn't shy away from the fact that this is a difficult journey, one that requires constant surrender and a willingness to allow God to transform us from the inside out.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Exodus 21 and 22, what's the one thing you hope our listener takes away from this conversation?
I think Dr. Oswald's challenge to consider the foundations of our own morality is incredibly relevant, especially in our increasingly secular culture. Yeah. If we truly believe that our lives have meaning and purpose, that there's something more to existence than just our fleeting experiences, then we need to grapple with the question of where that meaning comes from. Right. And if, as Dr. Oswald suggests, our sense of morality is ultimately rooted in the character of a loving and just God, then that has profound implications for how we live, how we treat others.
Right? And what we ultimately value.
It's a call to examine our hearts.
It is.
To align our actions with our beliefs. Wow. And to live in a way that reflects the character of the God we claim to serve. Right. And with that thought-provoking challenge, we come to the end of our deep dive. Okay. I hope you found this exploration of Exodus 21 and 22 as enlightening as I have.
It's been a pleasure diving into these ancient texts with you.
And to our listener. Okay. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Right. If you're intrigued by Dr. Oswald's insights, I highly encourage you to explore his lecture for yourself. It's a rich and rewarding exploration of how these seemingly ancient laws can still speak to us today. Yeah. Offering guidance, wisdom, and a deeper understanding of what it means to live a life of faith. Yeah. Until next time. Yep. Keep seeking. Keep questioning and keep exploring the depths of God's